episode 1874, My Strength is My Story with Dr. Deborah Waterbury. We are Mother Abraham.
Moms, needing a little inspiration and a ray of hope? You've come to the right place. This is the show that you can turn to for just the pick-me-up you need. This is Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. Here's your host, certified life coach, personal trainer, and nutritionist, Christiane Wargo. Staring at
a stop sign, watching. Happy, happy day. Today is my favorite day of the week. It is my Strength is My Story series, and we have with us Dr. Deborah Waterbury. She is back again. We just talked to her a little less than a year ago, and now she has a brand new book. And I'm telling you right now, this is one you're going to want to press repeat on over and over and over again. We are Mother Abraham. For those of you who are brand new to Create Your Now, friends and family of Dr. Debs, welcome to our family. I'm so delighted of your presence. If you already had the opportunity, you'll want to head on over to createyournow.com where you can learn more and sign up for the Kisses newsletter, the Keep It Simple strategy, everyday solutions to live, love, and impact. Well, I cannot wait for you to listen. In fact, I just really want to stop talking right now. Dr. Deb and I go deep in her story. And just to give you a little highlight, this is talking about Sarah, Abraham's wife. And she dives into her story a little bit differently. And as mothers and as women, all of us are going to be able to relate to it. I have listened to it already multiple times. I did the interview, but I am still pressing repeat. So without further ado, let's welcome in Dr. Deborah Waterbury. We are Mother Abraham.
Hello and welcome to Create Your Now. We have, I don't want to say an old timer, because she's not. She's a new timer, but she's coming back home, Dr. Deborah Waterbury. She is the wife of 35 years to her fabulous husband, Jeff, who is a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force National Guard and mother to their two boys. She holds a master's degree in the art of teaching and her doctorate of ministry in biblical expository studies. Dr. Deb is the founder of the nonprofit organization, Love Everlasting Ministries, dedicated to educating and empowering women all over the globe. She founded the Reap What You Sow School for Women and released a documentary, which has aired on 5 television networks and won 8 film festival awards. Dr. Deb is also a speaker and hosts 2 weekly podcasts, Real Life with Deb Waterbury and Real Life with Dr. Deb Waterbury. She has authored over 12 books, I think, I tried to count, and studies, including her latest, We Are Mother Abraham. You see, we had her on first for The Lies That Bind, and now we're on We Are Mother Abraham. Welcome home, my friend and sister in Christ. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me back. I always look forward to when I get to talk to you, so this is good.
Oh, well, thank you. It's such an honor and a privilege, and, you know, there's just something about two girls just coming together and chatting, and I know that's how this is going to run.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, we think about format. We're like, no, let's just talk.
That's right. Let's throw it all up in the air. Who cares about questions? Well, I know God is going to bless those who are listening, but first I have to ask you, what's bringing you joy this season in your life?
Oh, goodness. You know, I believe I just went through a real extensive 3 weeks of prayer and fasting at the beginning of the year. And I, in that 3 weeks, it's the first full fast I've ever done where you have nothing but water for the 3 weeks. And the Lord, you know, I used to think that fasting was one of those things that could not possibly do anything except for make me mad because I wasn't eating.
Yes.
And you know, it is hard to get through that, but man, it is like this pipeline between you and God just clears out because your flesh is out of the way. And the Lord really, he gave me some beautiful words and some beautiful encouragement. So, you know, the thing that brings me joy is that I know my Father speaks to me all day long, every single day. I simply have to hear him and learning to hear him and hearing the things that he says to me. And you know, as he says in Jeremiah, no, I think it's actually says in Hosea that he sings over us. I love that. And I'm feeling that more. So yeah, that's what's bringing me joy right now.
Just that picture singing over you. And after reading your brand new book, I mean, okay, putting those two together, I'm like just in ultimate awe, you know, because just that picture in your mind, that mental picture. How mm-hmm. awesome. Well, bring us up to date. I know you've had a few projects going on.
Yeah.
What's happening in the life of Dr. Deb?
Well, yeah, we do have a few projects going on. I do have the new shows, Get Real with Deb Waterbury and Real Life with Deb Waterbury. And those air every Thursday. You can get them on my YouTube channel. I also, you know, we have the school in Africa, Reap What You Sow. It's in its fifth class. We've got about 85% of our women who have graduated who are now running their own businesses. So it's very exciting. But we're just about to branch out and build a bigger school called Project Malunda. And Malunda, M-A-L-O-N-D-A, actually means trade in Chichua, which is the Malawian original language. So it's Project Trade. It's for women, but it'll be a bigger school that actually teaches tailoring and cosmetology and culinary arts. So when I was there last September, I was gifted, believe it or not, 2 acres of land by a wonderful missionary friend of mine, Annie Chikwaza, who runs an orphanage in Malawi. And she gave me this beautiful plot of land. So now we're going to start raising money. We've got the plans drawn to build the school. And yeah, I'm really excited. So that's a big deal.
That is a huge deal.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm still trying to figure out what I'm doing because, you know,
what do you want to be when you grow up?
Well, you know, I didn't want to be this, that's for sure.
Come on.
Doing stuff in Africa was just never something I wanted to do. I mean, I feel comfortable when I'm teaching. I feel comfortable when I'm writing. Those are truly gifts that the Lord has given me. But when he has me do things like this, which, you know, he does it to all of us, that he makes you move way outside of your comfort zone and move in the kingdom, all you got to do is say yes. It never means that you're comfortable there because I'm going to be honest, I'm still not comfortable running businesses overseas. I don't know how to run a business here. I can't do anything. So I'm not sure how to do that. I'm uncomfortable, but it makes me fully dependent on him. And the beautiful thing is I'm seeing miracle after miracle after miracle because I completely can't do this. So God does all of it. And so he's manifesting continually with the work we do in Africa. And I know it's because he's taken me into an area that I really have no clue what's going on.
Well, and that's where, you know, he does it all best, right? Is when he's at the helm driving everything and we just sit back and we take action. We don't sit back and not do anything. We take action, but he leads the way.
Which is exactly what my next book is about. It's about moving into that sort of thing. And I won't talk about that yet, but it's in my head because of course I'm working on it. So it's always interesting doing interviews on the book I finished when I'm already on my next one. So I have to switch gears and go back to that one.
Well, is there a date I need to be marking down for this new book?
You know, I really want to have it done by the end of the summer.
Ooh.
So this one's called Ankle Deep, and it's about our fear that keeps us from moving in faith. And so I'm going to deal with all kinds of fears, fears of disappointment, fear of man, fear of betrayal, fear of, you know, all of the fears that keep us from making ourselves ankle deep. I'm basing it on Joshua 1, when the Israelite, the priest had to step into the Jordan River before it split open. It requires faith, but often it's the fear that keeps us from being faithful. So I want to talk about that. And I can write the heck out of a book like that because that's where I operate.
I'm operating every day under fear. Lord, you just keep laying it on me. I got the words.
Exactly. And that's what I told my husband. I said, Lord, I can write the heck out of this book. So, that's what we're going to do right now.
Well, part of your fear challenge, because I was somewhat, I won't say stalking, but I'm going to say it anyway, stalking you on your Facebook, you posted that you went up flying. Your husband was doing a refueling or something. Yeah. I mean, fear? Come on.
You know, I don't have fear. We all have weird fears. So, you know, I've lived my whole life thinking I don't have any fear because I really don't. I mean, I'll do anything and I don't fear doing anything. But I'm telling you, it was during this 21 days of prayer and fasting that the Lord revealed to me that I have not done many things in my life that he would have me to do because I have a fear of being disappointed. And so because I'm so afraid that that person's going to disappoint me or the situation will not turn out the way I want, so it'll be disappointing, the safe thing to do is go, you know what? I'm just not going to do that because he's going to disappoint me or she's going to, and I don't want to set myself up for that. So what we often do is not step out in faith because of fear. And I realized, oh my goodness, I do have fear. And we all have fear of something. And I was having a my whole life, I'm 57. I really thought I had no fear, but I have a big fear of being disappointed by other people or other situations and being disappointed by God. I fear that he's going to disappoint me, that, you know, I feel like he's going to promise me something. And what if he doesn't do it? So I'm just not going to do it just in case he doesn't. And then I won't be disappointed. And I didn't realize I really was operating in that. I think we all have certain kinds of fear. And that's what I was sitting in church, you know, listening. I was listening to my pastor, but my mind was kind of moving in this. And the Lord, that's when he said, this is what the book's about. You have to write about these fears. And that's when I told my husband later, yeah, I can write the heck out of this book.
Woo! So the end of the summer, that's awesome, which means probably by fall.
Yeah,
before Christmas.
But again, yeah, that seems to be my cycle. I usually get them out done by about August, on the market by November, so that they're available for December. So yeah, that's my plan. You know, best laid plans of mice and men and all that. We'll see how it works.
Well, I'm marking it down on the calendar, girl, because it just means another get together for us. Well, let's talk about your current latest book, which is We Are Mother Abraham. And I just got to tell you, this book just, I loved it. Now, it is a fiction book.
Yes.
And I am not one who does a lot of fiction interviews, guest appearances, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, it was fiction, yet it was also a reality in motherhood.
Absolutely. It meant to be that way.
Where did this hit home for you?
Well, you know, I think every mother deals with, because the book deals with our struggle to let our children go. And the whole dilemma in that, and why is it so hard for mama? You know what I mean? Because it's much, you know, not that it's not hard for daddy, but it is so hard for mama to let go of those children. And so, yeah, my son and I speak on this with his permission because he's recovering and is in ministry himself now, but he's a recovering alcoholic. And so there was so much time, so many times that he would be gone on a bender or whatever, and I would lose complete contact with him and not know where he is. And I remember it would kill me because, you know, my mama instinct is I need to save him. I need to make sure he's okay. I need to, you know, protect him, even if it's protecting him from himself. I wanted to so bad, but when he would disappear it would be for periods of time. And no contact, no phone calls. And this is my youngest. He and I are just like this. So he calls me every day. So not to have all those times of not, it just killed me. I mean, it was murderously killing my heart. And there was one time when he disappeared for 6 weeks. And he was, you know, this is in his early 20s. He's maybe 20, 21. Miles is 31 now. So it was a while ago, but he disappeared for about 6 weeks. And I'm telling you, I didn't know if he was alive or dead. And it was, I was in misery. I mean, just physical misery. I was in ministry at the time too. So I'm trying not to let anybody else see the misery that I'm in. So it was all bottled up. And he'd been gone about 4 weeks, and I was sitting here in this office and just, you know, again, sobbing, Lord, please, please, you know, keep him safe. What do I do? I need to do something. And I kept hearing in my head, and this was a while ago, I kept hearing Mother Abraham over and over again. And so I finally stopped and said, why are you saying Mother Abraham? There is no such person. So I said, tell me why. Well, he directed me to read in Genesis the account of Abraham taking Isaac up to Mount Moriah to sacrifice him. And so I read it again, and I was familiar with it. But at the end of that, I was like, okay, I get that. But what does that have to do with Sarah? And I heard the Lord clear as day in my head say, Deb, as hard as this was for Abraham, do you know how hard it was for Sarah to watch Abraham take Isaac and allow him, knowing full well that he was going to be sacrificed, and allow her only miracle child to go? Do you understand how hard it was for mom to do that? And he said, this is my call on mothers, because you are created to do everything for them. And yet I call you to deny all of that and give them back to me. It is a high call. It's a hard call. And you know, he dealt with me through that. And so it was then, you know, 10, 12 years ago that I knew I was going to write this book. And I knew it was going to be in some way or another called Mother Abraham. I wasn't sure how. I just had to figure out what I was going to do, because I wanted it to be poignant and get the message across, but, you know, be enjoyable and easy read, but also minister at the same time. So, yeah, it comes from the heart of me. You know, I am Catherine in the book, basically.
Well, it got me. It struck a chord deep with me. Of course, as you know, I have 5 children, and we are kind of at the point, our daughter just married in October. And so letting them kind of go, it's hard.
It is.
You know,
is.
And letting them make their own mistakes and fall down, and you can't just, you know, pick them up and kiss the wound and say, oh, mama's got it, and go about your merry way.
You know, it really is in my desire, it's in your desire, Christiane, to make sure these our children are happy. That's in my DNA. That's in your DNA as a mother. And not even as a mother, it's in your DNA as a woman. You see, you know, you don't have to have kids to be a mother. If there's a child in the middle of the street, it's going to be every woman for a block is going to be running or screaming, somebody get there and get that boy or get that child. That's what we do, because it's a woman DNA thing. God created us purposefully this way. It's not that he didn't create men for that, but men were created with a different purpose in mind. We were created to nurture and upbring these children in the way of the Lord with love and compassion and to take care of everything. It's in our natures to do so. So to say and to look at that one day and say, yeah, I'm going to let you make all these terrible mistakes and figure out the line, because there's a line there too. What do I do to keep them safe, but then allow them to make mistakes? It's a continual walk with God in relinquishing and submitting to him.
So true. Well, you know, moms struggle with this every day. Women, like you said, it's just how God made. If you're female, this is strong in your DNA. Good luck getting it out if you're trying to.
It is. Yeah, you know, women, and I have women who tell me, but I don't want children. I've never had children. I don't want them. Well, these same women are always ones who have about 8 dogs and 6 cats and whatever. And that doesn't mean that they're trying to replace, but you have within you a need to care for and nurture a living thing. So you can't say that you don't have that creative part of you. Yeah, you do. You've just chosen to move it into this, and that's not a wrong area. It's just, that's just where you're getting that out. We have it in us. You can't deny it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's a beautiful streak. You know, I think of a skunk, right? And they're marked in that white. It's like, we're marked. We are so marked with that.
We're not stink, but it sure is pretty.
That's right. We are beautiful women. Well, where can a mom gain strength from Sarah, and as you call her, Mother Abraham?
Well, so, you know what, to write this book, because the book is, and I think we'll get into this in a second, so I hope I'm not jumping ahead, but it is a book within a book. So the fiction part has got Catherine, who is the mother, and she's having to let go of her drug-addicted daughter, Nicole, and her journey to do that. Well, Catherine reluctantly, and doesn't really want to, but ends up being in a Bible study of women who are studying the book Mother Abraham, which is about Sarah, and Sarah's struggle to let Isaac go. So every time she sits down to read that book, that we also read it with her. So you're actually reading 2 books at the same time. One historical fiction, because that's Sarah, and then one fiction. So, you know, as I was preparing for this and writing the historical fiction part of this, the book Mother Abraham, which is about Sarah's struggle to allow Isaac to go, I had to do a lot of research into Sarah. And, you know, there's not a lot in the Bible about Sarah. There are situations. We have lots of situations that we can look at, and a couple of things that Sarah had said along the way, you know, the things she did about Hagar, the things she did when Ishmael messed with her son, the way she responded both times her husband let the king take her into his harem and act like she was his sister. Both times submitting, not necessarily just to Abraham, but to the Lord and the Lord's provision over her. I looked at all those situational things and saw within her then her character. And what I saw entirely with Sarah is that she was strong-willed. She had an opinion about everything. She did not mind talking about her opinion. And you know, I'm talking about just about every woman made. But she also had this amazing trust for the Lord. Even if she questioned him, you know, she stood outside that door when those angels were saying she's going to have a kid, and she laughed because she questioned it. but she trusted still. You know what I mean? And when brass tacks happened and she had to allow her husband to take that boy up to the mountain, she allowed it to happen. Now, we don't know how she responded. You know, there's no telling. I'm sure she was dying. She may have had a few choice words for Abraham. I don't know. I can imagine, given what everything else we've seen of her, she probably did have an opinion and made sure he knew it. But at the end of the day, she let him go. And so it was that even in the midst of her strong personality and this need to protect, she was willing to submit to God. This is what I learned from Sarah. It's not wrong to be strong, not wrong to have an opinion, not wrong to want to worry and take care of my children. But when those things stand in the way of my submitting to what God's will is for those children, then I'm stepping over the line.
Such wise words. Very, very wise. Well, speaking of the book and how you set it up, you wrote it to the effect of, yes, you're reading the fiction part of it.
Right.
But then you go into, let me find my, the book of the book of the book, a few chapters in here. Here we go.
Chapter 7.
Yeah. I love that you started on chapter 7, by the way, just saying.
Yes, it wasn't accidental.
Oh, that's awesome. I had no idea you were going to say that. That's cool. How awesome is that? Well, you have it marked differently. Mm-hmm. And it's the book within the book, yet you still have something. You have a Bible study.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the Bible study, because, you know, the way, and this was actually my publicist's idea, and it was brilliant because I got to the end of the book and we were talking about the format. And, you know, Catherine, in the fictional part, she's doing a Bible study of the book Mother Abraham. So I make allusion to, she's looking at some of the questions and some of them she might not even, but we don't see that. And what my publicist said was, wouldn't it be cool if they're reading the book, but they don't have access to the Bible study that the characters in the book were doing? So what if you actually wrote that Bible study and then made that also available? So I did. And that I did that after the fact. I wrote the Bible study. And at the end of the book, there's either a link you can go to or a little barcode, and you can download the free Bible study that actually goes with the book about Sarah, Mother Abraham.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I have not looked at the Bible study yet. And you have something that's coming up on one of your weekly podcasts.
Yes, on Get Real with Deb Waterbury, starting on February the 20th. If you go to my YouTube channel, which is just Deb Waterbury, and subscribe, then they'll tell you, you know, that when it'll come up. I don't know how that works. It all seems like it's social. That's what I have young people that work for me for. But anyway, you get notification that the show is coming up. But for starting on February 20th, every week I'll be teaching for 6 weeks the Bible study that goes with Mother Abraham inside of We Are Mother Abraham. So, yeah.
That is so exciting. Well, I will be sure to have the links to the book, actually. So then when you get the book, you can get the Bible study, because you're going to want to pick up your own copy of We Are Mother Abraham. When I read this book, like I said, I don't read a lot of fiction. I really didn't know what to expect. I didn't read, you know, because I get a lot of books sent to me, I get kind of the summaries and, oh, you can ask these questions. And I didn't even look at those. I just picked up the book and I thought, I'm just going to jump in. Mm-hmm. And I read books a little weirdly. I actually go to the acknowledgments because there's some hidden treasures in the acknowledgments.
Yes.
I love that. And then I always love to read either the prologue or the preface or the introduction, whatever. I read those and just kind of absorb it.
That's smart.
Thank you. That's how I read. Now, whether it's right or wrong, I don't know.
Smart reading right there.
Well, I jumped into this and I could not put it down.
I'm glad.
And I was like, okay, I need my daughters to read this. Mm-hmm. Our oldest, we have two daughters. Our oldest just married in October.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. And then we have she's number three of the five, so she's right in the middle. But she is a sophomore going to the university. And I'm just like, they need to get this way before they get too far involved.
If they had told us this stuff before we had to deal with it, I mean, that would have been so much nicer. So that's smart too, Christiane. They do need to know right now.
Yeah. And it would be such... You know, I'm thinking Mother's Day is coming up. I mean, I know we just came off Valentine's Day, but we've got Mother's Day coming up.
It's a good gift for mothers and women of all. But, you know, I'm also getting a lot of feedback from men who are reading it. And they're reading it because I'm going to be just frank, they quite frankly cannot figure their wives out. Because, you know, and so they're this they look at them and think, what is wrong with her? I mean, she went to college. It's not like she died. And but these moms are just dying because their daughter went to college or their son went to college or things like that. Because it doesn't have to be as monumental and horrible as what I experienced, though that often occurs. It might just be that they spend the night at a friend's house for the first time. And Daddy's like, yay, we get to go out. Mama's checking the phone, constantly wondering where, and they don't understand why. And so a lot of, I have a good friend in Texas, and she had given the book to her pastor's wife, but her pastor read it first because he said, I need to understand why my wife is a nut and why she goes so crazy about these kids. And the feedback I'm getting is that it's making them understand that it's not that we're emotional. It's that God created us this way to utterly do. I mean, the human baby is the most helpless of all infant animals on the face of the earth. And so you think we have to do everything for them, everything besides breathe. We don't have to breathe for them. But other than that, when they're born, we got to do everything for them. We're created to do that. And then to literally turn your back on that is crazy. And so, I remember being, and moms, we get so mad at our husbands because they don't seem to care like we care. I remember when Miles was gone and Jeff, I'll never forget this because it blessed his heart. I mean, now I understand, but at the time, Miles was gone, he's gone for a couple weeks, and Jeff looked at me and said, you want to go out to dinner tonight? And I was appalled. I mean, like, literally, I was like, go out to eat? Are you joking? Our son is not here. He's gone. We don't know where he is. And Jeff's like, yeah, well, we got to eat. I mean, to him, and I'm thinking, you don't love him like I love him because you're not dying inside. And he's thinking, what is wrong with this woman? Her whole life is ended. There's nothing we can do. Well, it's because we were created differently and with different purposes. And my purpose had been stripped from me. And so for both sides to understand the differences in those is just of paramount importance.
So true. And I can see where guys could. So you just slip one in and say, hey, hon, will you read this and tell me what you think? I mean, you could have a whole dialogue here. Oh, I'm thinking marriage counseling.
Yes, it is. It's an amazing, because you know how many, when something happens to the children, almost always the marriage breaks up. Mm-hmm. Because it almost always breaks up because the other one doesn't think the other one cares for them, the child, like they did, or it didn't affect them appropriately. And it's almost always the woman who falls apart and she thinks the husband didn't care when that's not true. But look at the statistics of marriages that break up when there is a catastrophe with a child. It doesn't even have to be death. It can just be a separation. And then the family breaks up because there's a misunderstanding of how this person's dealing with that issue.
Yeah, there's a lot of communication issues. I mean, we could spend literally all day on what goes into it. But God made men differently and made women very differently.
Yes, God's smart. I mean, he's way smarter than we are. And so he did it on purpose. And we just try to, you know, I don't want to be married to me. Lord have mercy. I'm not sure how Jeff's married to me, but I often try to make him act like me. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
I want him to respond like me. I want him to think like me. And at the end of the day, I would dislike me. So I don't know why I want that, but we tend to project that onto our spouse, and they do too. You know, they're like, what is wrong with you? Just brush it off. She went to college. We'll see her next weekend. What is wrong with you? To him, he's trying to project his created nature onto me, and I'm not created that way. It really is an understanding of differences, mm-hmm. which is, you know, fundamental to every marriage study you'll ever do. But we sometimes forget that it'll manifest in ways that are very tricky, and we don't see it as a manifestation of that when in truth it is. And
yes.
I deal with that in the book too. I deal with that with Catherine and her husband, and Sarah and Abraham. So I try to hit all aspects of this within the book.
Oh, yeah, you hit them all. I mean, you got me kind of laughing and giggling at times, and then I'm sitting there going, that's you. And then I'm sitting there crying, and I'm like, the mascara is going to run, and I got to talk to this woman. We've got to stop this.
Well, if you feel better, I cry when I read it too, and I wrote it. So there you go.
Yeah, it is good stuff. Well, you talked about your character, Catherine, mm-hmm. who you most identify with.
Yes.
How has God grown that character?
Gosh, you know, by the end of the book, I really feel like Catherine is where I was, you know, 6-7 years ago when I finally began to understand this and understand that what my purpose was in it. And that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to show that there is, and the same with Nicole, her daughter. I mean, I was Nicole too, and there's a growth there, and I'm of understanding, yeah, you're an addict, or yeah, you had issues or whatever, and but there's redemption and beauty in the love of Christ, and I want her to, she sees that just as Catherine begins to find that in her own way, even though she already knew Jesus. You know, it's not even a matter of trying to come to salvation for this mother. It's a matter of understanding how God is in the midst of all of that and how beautiful it is, and then moving in your purpose afterwards. So yeah, she grew kind of the way I think all of us should grow. And I can still see me, you know, years ago when I finally sort of came to this, you know, where it's a continuing journey. I'm certainly not perfect. Ask my boys, they'll tell you that.
we'll get to the heart of it. We'll just ask Jeff and see what Lieutenant Colonel says.
Yes, as soon as he'll say the right thing in front of me, then you need to get him by himself, and then he'll tell you what he really thinks.
Exactly. Oh, I'm sure some sweet things. Well, as you were going through the book and writing it, I know as an author, it is one of those things where you find your little blessings or ahas that come to you. What did you discover as you were writing it or at the end of it that you missed when you were actually living it out?
Oh, goodness. Well, and I think I shared this with you before we even started, and I want to share it again. And it was how, because, you know, when you're in the middle of this, you can feel like God doesn't care. Or you can feel like he's kind of got his attention somewhere else. He's not paying attention. So you feel like sometimes you got to go, hey, God, remember, I'm in the middle of this issue. And then we can feel almost secondary and like there's something wrong with me that I'm falling apart here. You know, where's my faith or whatever. There's all kinds of things that we can feel. And what I, in the midst of writing this, there's a section in there with Sarah when, and I don't want to give it too much away, but she is visited by Jesus at some point within kind of a dream state, whatever. And in the midst of this, he begins to tell her how he feels about mothers in particular. And you know, I didn't know that. I didn't grab how adored and how cherished mothers are, women in particular, but then mothers within the realm of that. What a high station that God has for us. And how high he holds us in such esteem. And you can say those words, but to really know it, to know that God really is honored by you just being a mother. And so there's that section there when he starts saying to this to her. And, you know, I wrote the book and I go back and read it again about 100 times. But the first time I read through it, I got to that section and I am not lying. I don't remember writing it. I started reading it and my husband was in the other room and I started sobbing like out loud, that stupid crying, sobbing, you know, when you sound like an idiot. So I started doing that and Jeff comes in, he's, you know, he doesn't know what's wrong with me. He said, "What is wrong?" And I said, I didn't write this. And he didn't know what I was talking about still, because I was still blubbering. But I listened and read what Jesus said to Sarah. And I mean, I don't remember writing it. It was, and I still don't remember writing it. I have no recollection of writing those words. I don't know that those words would have come from me, because they're beautiful. And I'm not a, you know, a narcissistic writer. I see everything wrong with everything. The fact that anybody likes what I write totally surprises me constantly. So for me to be able to say, this is the most beautiful thing I've ever read, is outside of character if I recognize it. I don't recognize it. So I think the Holy Spirit at that moment needed to write through me, because it's still something that I have to grab a hold of. This is how my Father sees me. This is how my Savior sees me. This is how he cherishes mothers. And I think he wanted it to be seen. So he maybe moved me out of the way for a second and wrote that down. It's something I wish I'd known, something I have to keep reminding myself of, but I think it's something the Lord wants us to know.
That's so beautiful. I know everybody has to now pick up a copy, because they're going to want to know what Sarah focused on when she had that dream. We are Mother Abraham. Within your book, you referenced the Bible study, like which we talked about. You went through it, but you also had a process, because like you said before, there was a lot more, and you pulled different things out from the scriptures. Mm-hmm. You obviously had to read about Abraham, too. So switch to a moment to dads.
Yeah, you know, I think that it's sometimes a little easier for us to stand in judgment of dad because they move sometimes what we would see without emotion. Abraham, there's just so little. The Lord leaves out a lot of detail in the Bible. He leaves out a lot of emotional detail. Because at the end of the day, I think he needs us to realize that's not what needs to drive us. One of the things I say to people all the time when I'm counseling is you're being driven by your heart. And this will lead you down a wrong road all the time. You have to be driven by what you know to be right, according to God's word, not by what you feel. And I think that's why God leaves that out a lot of times and doesn't tell us the emotions behind stuff, because that's not important. And so Abraham, we don't know much about how his personality really, or how he dealt with things. God didn't share that stuff with us. I think Abraham was very faithful in some things and not faithful in others. But when it came to that place, you know, Isaac was not 10 or 11, as we often try to see him as. He's probably in his early 20s when this happened. So, you know, there's been a lot of time going. Abraham's at this point 120, 121, 122. He's had a lot of opportunity for God to show himself faithful. I think it was easier for Abraham to go and say, you know, all right, I'm just going to do this because I know my God is a God of love. And I know my God will only do what is good for me to his glory, that he has this beautiful plan for my life and for the life of my son. And because I know God so well, I can do whatever God tells me to do because I trust him implicitly. And that really is that's it at the end of the day. And I think Abraham had lived long enough, 120 something years by now, that what we may see is a callous decision to just go, yep, taking the boy up there, I'm going to just chop him up because God told me to. You know, we may see that as callous, but in reality, what that is Abraham knew God so well that he knew this God would only do what was most perfect. And whatever that required, Abraham knew that it was going to be perfect. And that required Abraham to know God really well. And so that's what I see about him. He was flawed, did a lot of stuff. I mean, that whole harem situation always annoys me. But I do think that he was, he knew God. And I tell people that all the time. If you don't trust him, it's because you don't know him. If you're not happy right now, it's because you don't know him. If you're having a hard time turning your children over, it's because you don't know God. Because if you knew him well enough, you would be in such what I say, and I may have said this on the last show, peace, love, joy, contentment, and harmony. Those five things is what every believer should be feeling at all moments of time. Mothers, fathers, everybody. Peace, love, joy, contentment, and harmony. If you don't feel those five things, it's because you don't know God well enough. And there's always going to be a crack in your vertical at that point is what I always call it. So figure out where the crack is and fill that crack in with God's word, because you can feel love, peace, joy, contentment, and harmony in all situations if you know this God that adores you that much. And so that's kind of a roundabout way of me telling you. You can tell that I'm a preacher because I just start preaching. I'm sorry.
Bring it on, girl. I love it. We need to hear that. And most of us hear it, but sometimes we have to hear it from someone else. We have to be in a different season to comprehend it.
I agree.
You know, sometimes God has to soften our heart. We have to go through something in order to say, oh, yeah, I've got like 200 cracks that need to be filled, Lord.
Yes. You know? I think that's why there's so many different, every book I write, I mean, this was number 13. So of all the books I've written, that's always the issue right there. Do you know God? But you got to come at it from all these different directions. I mean, I've written romantic allegories that are set in the medieval times to, you know, personal testimonies that lies that bind and really gets down into it. Devotionals. This one was just fiction about mothers, but every one of them is about understanding and trusting God because you know him. They all have the same message, but they're coming at it from different directions because in different seasons of our lives, different situations, we'll hear it better. So I think that's why I tell people, so it's hard for me to charge for counseling. I do a small bit, but it's hard for me to do that because I'm not giving them anything new. I mean, I tell them the same thing every time. You need Jesus. I don't know what to tell you. We'll talk about how to get there a different way if you want to. But at the end of the day, I'm going to tell you the same stuff. If you want to have a real high price counselor that's going to give you all this stuff, you need to go find somebody else and pay them some more money. I'm going to tell you about Jesus, and that's it. That's what you need. It's the same message over and over again.
That's so good. Well, in your book, you use a phrase. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to go into too much detail, but I want to touch on it because it showed up a lot. And it was a sentence of nothingness.
Mm-hmm.
And it really grabbed me. What are you referring to?
I was right then referring to, is I think it was when the angel said to both of them, there's purpose in the nothingness. When you feel like you can't do anything, mamas have to deal with that. I can't do anything. I mean, there's literally nothing I can do, or there's nothing I should do. It could be your toddler just fell down and skinned their knees and everything in you wants to scoop them up, but there's purpose in doing nothing. There's purpose in that state where you feel helpless, because God is not only dealing and doing what he needs to do for your child's destiny, he's dealing with your heart. There's purpose in your nothingness because you're going to be able to see the manifestation of God's greatness because you weren't in the way. That's what I was trying to get at when the angel was telling them this, that you feel that you're in this place of nothingness, but there is purpose there. Please don't feel like you're swimming around in this dark. There is a purpose there. God is going to show you who he is, and God is going to show your child who he is. There's purpose there.
That's beautiful. Well, I want to read something at the end of the book. Let me see here. I love this, and I highlighted it. I marked it. I was like, okay, we're going to star this and asterisk it. It says, and it's towards the very, very end. In fact, it was chapter 23. Okay. You say, as mothers, we have to allow God to give our children their own stories to do the same thing.
Ooh, that's hard. Because letting our children have their own stories means you have to think about, I can think about my story. So, you know, we did an interview with a year ago with The Lies That Bind, and what actually took me to that book was the lies about my own identity. And that began when I was gang raped when I was 12. Now, having been gang raped when I was 12, and then all the promiscuity and the alcohol and the, you know, affairs and all the things that went on through the rest of my life, the plates that I was spinning, the images I had, all that stuff that I deal with in The Lies That Bind, all those lies about who you are, I wouldn't want my child to have to do that. You know what I mean? To think about, you know, my parents didn't know that I was gang raped until that book came out, because I didn't tell them. We want our children to have rainbows and lollipops. That's what we want. We don't want them to have, but we have to allow the Lord. But that's my story. My story is what gives me the avenue by which I can speak to and help freedom for women all over the globe. I mean, I speak to women all over the globe. And it's the same freedom that is offered because I have a story. God built my story. Why would I not want my child to have a story? And the only way my child's going to have a story is if I let them have a story, which means I got to let them fall and I got to let them hurt and I got to let awful things happen and not run in, you know, like Mighty Mouse, here I come to save the day. I can't be that. I have to allow God to give them a story. And that's hard. But if you look at it that way, I was talking to another mom not long ago, and she said, I read the book and I heard, let me give your child a destiny. And I thought, oh, that's really good. Because that's, if I get in the way, I'm getting in the way of my child's destiny. And I don't want to do that. And the story is the same. I want him to have a story. I want Miles to have a story. Miles is in ministry right now. He ministers to people right, left, and center because he was in jail, because he's an alcoholic, because he was in Afghanistan, because of all the things that I didn't want those things for him. But those are his story. And it's beautiful. It's a beautiful story. I wouldn't deny him that story.
Except we would like to deny what we go through in order for them to gain that story.
Yes.
But you won't gain that story unless if you go through the trenches.
That's exactly right. I mean, that's Romans 5. That's James 1. You know, over and over again, God tells us, this is what does Romans 5 tell us? Those struggles bring perseverance, and perseverance brings character. And we want that for ourselves. We get that for ourselves. But I'm like, no, can I just talk to my kid about that? can I just tell them about it? And then they'll get character and perseverance. But that's not how it comes. It always comes through the struggles. And I want my child to have that. You know, I want that for them.
Yeah, it's interesting because I'm sure you've been asked with the previous book, The Lies That Bind, would you do anything different?
You know, I wish I could go back and do some things differently. I made some such bad decisions based on false identity, my own decisions, culpable for all of them. But would I have made them if I understood who I really was? Of course not. Yeah, I would love to go back and not have hurt my husband like I did, or hurt my children like I did, or hurt myself like I did. However, I wouldn't change a thing because I am who I am today. And I know what I know today because of what God did through all those things. You keep using this word, but the manifestation of God through those things made him so real to me. And then to be able to go back and have so many areas where women will come to me and I can relate to them and they will talk to me because I've been there. God has given me, in all the terrible things that have happened to me and all the terrible things that I have done, I have so many avenues by which I can help because there's so, you know, almost everything anybody's ever done, I have done. And so I can say, yes, but let me tell you what Jesus does because I've been there. I've lived through it. So let me tell you about truth because I can, it's just given me tools that I wouldn't have had otherwise. But yeah, there are times I wish I could not have hurt those people. I mean, I wish I could have gone through all that stuff and not hurt people. Unfortunately, that's part of their story. You know what I mean? Even my hurting my husband and my hurting my children is part of the story that God has given. You know, God's great. He makes beauty from ashes. He restores all that the locusts have eaten. And making beauty from ashes means he's taken all that garbage that you wish you could just take back and said, but no, I'm going to use that garbage. And all that garbage is going to fertilize the garden in that story. And it's going to fertilize the garden in that story because he's a God of so many dimensions. That's who he is.
Praise the Lord for that. Mm-hmm. I mean, that makes me very content, very joyful, in the fact knowing that our God redeems and he takes exactly what we mess up on, and it's all to the glory of him.
Absolutely. I have no business being where I am right now. Jeff and I have no business being married. I mean, according to the world, we should have been divorced a long time ago. I shouldn't love his heir. He shouldn't love me so much. We should hate each other. And we did for a while at the beginning of our marriage, for 17 years. There is, according to logic, I shouldn't be married to Jeff. According to logic, I shouldn't be so happy right now. According to logic, I shouldn't have a ministry and a school. I shouldn't have anything. I shouldn't be an author. I should be sitting somewhere and having people tell me how awful I am. That's what logic would tell me. But God is bigger than that. And the redemption that he gives moves and makes serious beauty from some ashes you can't even imagine could become anything else. But that's only God can do that.
Well, I know there's a woman who feels like she's drowning in ashes right now. Mm-hmm. You know, she's just, whether it's, you know, a young woman, an older woman, wherever she is in that stage, what would you tell her to encourage her to say, you know what, the beauty is yet to come?
You know, for believers, I would always encourage them to move into God, to move more toward God and his character, reading their Bible. But I also would always encourage women to reach out to a small group, to a group of women who know God after God. Like you go to God first, but then you need to move into some accountability, some people who will speak wisdom into your, and this goes for believers and non-believers alike. You will always believe you. When things are going on in your head, that's you talking. And no matter what you say, whether you're being inspired by Jesus or by the enemy, we believe our own voices. You know what I mean? There's a reason Satan doesn't sound like a snarling goat in your brain. He sounds like you because he knows you'll believe you. So we will, and we'll also agree with us all the time. I will agree with myself no matter what. I mean, in my head, I am right about everything because I just figure that's a thought and therefore I believe my thoughts. Well, the only thing way you can get outside of that is to have someone else of wisdom speak into your life. And then you have something else to grab a hold of besides just your thoughts because you don't believe you and you might be telling yourself a lie. So make sure you go to someone else and have them speak into you and understand God's never done. You know, he says it over and over again. We're beautiful tapestries and he's weaving every single day. He's not done with you. And no matter where you are right now, he's building your story. this is your story. And it's your story because it's only yours. You're the only one that has it. You're the only one God gave it to because he expected you to use it. So if you'll see where you are right now as part of your story, purposefully yours, and move through it, then you understand that story is meant to the betterment of God's kingdom. And he gave it just to you because he trusts just you with that. It's a perspective that if we see that in the midst of these things, it gives purpose in the nothingness.
Gorgeous. I just got to tell you, much wisdom there. Walk with the wise, right? And there is strength in your story. Well, what is your hope as people grab this book? And I would encourage them, they need to pick up a couple copies. I'm just saying, because when people come into the home, I mean, that's what I see with this book is friends that come over and I don't necessarily need to say anything, but I know they may be hurting or need something more.
The cover's really cool. My graphic designer is, and because it's kind of a satiny finish, we really wanted to make it attractive. But you notice the mountains, that's Mount Moriah up there, are upside down. And we did that on purpose because we're turning the concept of Father Abraham upside down to Mother Abraham. So, you know, trying to be real cool there. That's because I have young people that work for me. I would not have a cool cover, but that is a cool cover.
And you did it also. I noticed it with the chapters. I was like,
I didn't do that. I have people who are so smart that they do people.
Hey, God puts those people in place, right?
Exactly. That's right. Yeah, they're there to help me. There's wonderful thing and multitudes of people.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it has this, like you said, it's this texture, probably has fingerprints, and I've read it in the kitchen, and I just carried it with me, so no telling, don't look too close. Maybe there's pizza stains on it, but you know, it's a book that I think when someone's hurting, mm-hmm. or you just know they need something and you don't know what to say,
right?
You can just give them this and say, you know what, when you have a chance, just go. And you could even mark a certain passage mm-hmm. in there for them to start with.
And it's an easy read. I mean, yes. You know, it's not complicated. People read it in one, maybe 2 days because it is an easy read. You're reading a story. And so it's not deep necessarily. It's very deep, but it's not, you know, hard deep where you feel like you get out the dictionary and your basic systematic theology book or whatever. You don't have to get that out.
You're reading a story.
Yeah. You're reading a story and it's going to give you great truths, but it's an easy read.
Yeah. Well, what do you hope the reader will gain when they get their fingers on it?
I want people, because I knew I couldn't solve the problem. You know, when I started writing this, I really struggled with, okay, what's my purpose here, Lord? What's the purpose of writing this? Because I can't make it easy. I'm not going to say, okay, if you do this and you believe this, you won't feel this. I can't do that. That's not true. You're going to have children. You're going to let go of them and it's going to kill you. So that's, you know, that I can't change that. That is the reality. So Lord, what is it that you need me to do? Well, the purpose of this book is to explain why. Why does this hurt me? Why am I responding in such anguish over this? Because there's beauty in understanding the whys. And then I want besides understanding the why, I want people to understand, women in particular, how amazing you are to God, how much he cherishes you. Because again, knowing that you're cherished and cared for while he's telling you why you're feeling what you're feeling can bring you peace and security in the midst of the storm. And because you got to go through it. Your children have to go through it. You have to go through it. It's another way to trust God. But if I know why I'm going through it, and I know that God adores me in the midst of it, then I can get through it. So that's the purpose of the book. And that's what I really want people to get from it.
Amen. Well, I know they're going to get lots of stuff, especially when they relinquish control.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's hard. And even coming to a book, you know, I mean, I have my own way of reading books, but I read a lot of books because that's just part of what I do.
Right.
So I'm a little weird in that regard. But aside from that, when you look at something that you know is touching you and it's like real, whether it's fiction or nonfiction book,
right.
But what's being spoken to you and you get that knock on the inside, like that gut-wrenching hello. This mm-hmm. is you in the story, or this is you.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the encouragement for the one who's saying, I'm not willing to let go. I'm just going to keep holding on.
That's, I think there's still encouragement in the fact that there's a purpose in that too. And there's a reason for that. I, you know, 'cause all of us do that. I mean, I did that too. We all get to this place where we're like, nope, nope. And I remember when God told me, you know, in that part I left out about that part in my office, he went on to tell me, after saying this was really hard for Sarah, I heard him clearly say, now, Deb, if I decide to kill Miles, you've got to be okay with it. And I said, nope, out loud. I said, nope, nope, not okay with it. Not okay, not okay. I am not Abraham and I am not Sarah. And no, I'm not okay with it. So I'm not giving you permission to do that. Sorry, not okay with it. But he, you know, he kept pressing into me. And it was that because I was not willing to let go. I eventually was willing to, you know, it's not a matter of saying, yeah, God, go ahead and kill my boy. It's a matter of saying, Father, I relinquish his destiny to you because you're so good and I trust you so much that whatever that looks like, it may hurt me so badly, but I trust you above my pain. That takes time. So what I would tell a woman or a man, anybody who is still at that point, like, no, no, I have to take care of them. I'm not going to let go. I don't trust God right now with that. That's okay. Well, everybody, it's a process. We all are there, but don't stop leaning in. Don't stop pressing in. It's when you say no, and then you turn around, and walk away. This is a problem. And that's a danger. And what that means is you're going to live in bondage. You're living in the bondage because you know what? God's got control, whether you relinquish it or not. It's not about me saying, yeah, you don't get to do that. It's about God saying, no, no, I will be doing what it is that I will be doing. I need your heart to align with mine so that you can then know my character, that I love you and I love him and I love them. You're the one that'll suffer. You can say, I'm not going to let go, but it really doesn't matter whether you do or not, because God's going to do what he's going to do. If you will let go, there's so much in store for you. So just keep leaning into that.
There's so much hope. I love it. Well, I know people are going to want to connect with you, Dr. Deb. Where can they find you?
They can just go to debwaterbury.com, and that's all one word, debwaterbury.com. And they can get the book there, or they can get it on Amazon as well. You can also get, because when I do that show on the 20th, it's on my YouTube channel, but they're also available as downloads on my website. And there's a way to contact me if you want to, you know, email or whatever. You can do all that on the website too.
But we'll be sure to have all of that information in the show notes readily available for you so you can reach out to her or find her with her latest Bible study. Well, before I let you go, Dr. Deb, because you know what? You're coming back for, I don't know, number 14. Yes. We're going to work on number 15 and 16 soon, I'm sure.
Yes. Well, I've got about 6 in my head right now. I feel schizophrenic half the time, yeah.
Oh, my goodness gracious. I will be praying for your husband over the next few years. I'm just saying.
Thank you.
He needs the extra prayer.
He needs it on a daily basis, just dealing with me, sister.
My husband, too. And that's a whole nother episode.
I know.
Oh, well, the series is called My Strength is My Story. What has your mother Abraham's story gifted you?
It's gifted me perspective. It really has. And the end of the day, my life and our lives are a seeking after that perspective. I naturally have a worldly perspective. So do you. You know, my eyes, by the virtue of the fact that where they are in my head, look out, and they look out to the world. So I have a worldly perspective. It takes effort on both my part and the Lord's part and my hearing the Lord to make me look up and have an eternal perspective, a heavenly perspective. My mother Abraham's story helped me have a God perspective, even outside of me, but for my boys. There have been moments when, you know, Miles would disappear and I would just spend days throwing up. But then after I finally began to have that heavenly perspective, there was one time when he disappeared and he tried to commit suicide. And in his drunken state, actually called me. So my husband and I ran to his, it took about 30 minutes to get there to get to his apartment. And he was just so drunk, he couldn't even do it right. So he had cuts all over him, but he couldn't get it done. And I remember being in the truck with him, and Jeff had him in the front seat, and I was sitting in the back seat, and I was looking up at the clouds, and I had such peace. I'm looking at the clouds, and I said, Lord, you've got a big story for this boy, so I thank you so much that you're keeping him alive to tell his story. And I was even marveling myself at how I wasn't upset. I mean, I didn't want this for him. I would have loved it to have been something else. But the peace that my father was in control and that this was all part of Miles' story, and I trusted that God would bring Miles through it, and he has, that's what I have gotten from my mother Abraham's story, an ability to step out of myself, side of myself and go, God, I know you got this. And be and mean it, you know?
God's got a high calling on all women out there. Amen. It's just up to us if we're willing to step into it and become Mother Abraham.
Amen.
Thank you so much, Dr. Deb. I can't wait for our chat again. Many blessings. Love you.
I love you too. Thank you.
Feeling inspired, ready to train for life, and love your journey? Visit createyournow.com for more incredible resources to help you along the way. We'll see you next time on Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. And remember, always be sure you consult your physician before beginning any health and fitness plan.